This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. This past week, President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to a multitude of charges, including falsifying submissions to a bank and campaign finance violations. Campaign finance regulations are considered by many to be among the most pressing issues affecting American democracy, but it can be hard for the average citizen to understand them.
A new documentary seeks to change that. Dark Money is about just that, money spent on political campaigns with roots that are sometimes impossible to trace. The film follows John Adams, a Montana journalist and Wisconsin native, in his efforts to expose the effects of the Supreme Court ruling Citizens United and its connections to dark money groups involved in local and federal elections there. Montana has had a push-pull between outside corporate interests and internal politics for more than a century.
Here in Wisconsin, potential campaign finance violations were at the heart of the so-called John Doe 2 case involving Governor Scott Walker's campaign and outside groups in 2011 and 2012. The film opens in Milwaukee today. Dark Money director and producer Kimberly Reed joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to discuss the greater implications of campaign finance issues, from rules to reforms to dark money's expanding reach.
You know, these days it's not just political campaigns. We're seeing it just with pushing issues. We're seeing it with pushing judicial nominations. That's something we're seeing at the federal level now. The technique is usually by hiding money coming through a social welfare nonprofit group. There are 501c4 groups that were designed to do things like a neighborhood association that cleans up the park. That's actually what I belong to, a 501c4 group that does that in my neighborhood. What they weren't meant to do is to hide millions of dollars that are intended to go into political campaigns or issue campaigns so that they can change people's votes.
Right. And how do you feel that the influence of dark money has changed the moderating role of political parties? Do you think it's attributed to the growth of the, you know, quote, extreme sides on the right or the left?
Absolutely. I mean, what we're seeing is systems that are actually becoming more powerful than the political parties themselves. And as you say, they do tend to moderate each other and sort of swing back and forth, especially these days. But first of all, I mean, you know, dark money happens on both the left and the right. So I think we all need to watch out for it. But in the 2014 election cycle, the Koch brothers spent more money than the Republican Party. So when you have two people who are beckoning potential political candidates to, you know, their convention so that they can kiss the ring. When you have individuals, not even two brothers, individuals like Sheldon Adelson, who kind of force people to run through their own gamut to make sure that these folks are good on issues, it really distorts democracy. It takes power out of the hands of the political parties. It certainly takes power out of the hands of the everyday individuals. And it puts it into the hands of, you know, just a couple wealthy people.
How did Montana become the microcosm for the issue of dark money that drew your attention to it enough to focus Montana in a documentary?
You know, it's a bit of a complicated answer to that, which sort of takes the whole film to answer. I think it's a really interesting answer, but just in broad strokes, Montana has a really interesting history of dealing with corporate influence in politics. As a state that has a lot of natural resources and not very many people there, for its entire history, it's been subject to control from outside money that comes in, wants to develop natural resources, and then wants to leave without cleaning up after the inevitable mess that is created with a lot of that development. And by contending with that and developing, I think, a pretty strong backbone of resistance when it comes to that corporate influence over Montana's politics, you see a pretty strong grassroots pushback against that sort of spending in politics. The other side of that kind of dramatic clash that we saw happening in Montana was the fact that the same group of lawyers who were behind Citizens United started opening up shop, quite literally, in Montana so that they could test the relatively strong campaign finance laws. I think the thinking was, you know, if you could tear down the laws in Montana, you could do it anywhere. So that, you know, it became the tip of the spear for a lot of those legal battles. I'm from Montana. I grew up hearing those stories about the history of the mines in places like Butte, Montana, and seeing that pushback. And I knew those stories, and I kind of figured that clash might happen between this, you know, handful of people who are pushing against Montana's campaign finance laws on one side and grassroots, you know, opposition on the other side. And it just seemed like the lay of the land was right, that there was going to be some drama. And it turns out in retrospect that I called that one right.
You mentioned Montana has a good history of resisting corporations and big money in politics. But for those listeners out there who may not know automatically what kind of strategies and tactics that dark money and money in campaign finance may do, can you touch upon some of the strategies such as ads or things like that? And what do you think if these strategies are an abuse of free speech?
So the first thing that voters can do to keep an eye out for these tactics is to just follow the source of the funding as much as you can. Now, sometimes that's tough because they're sort of onto the game and usually name an organization something like Americans for Apple Pie who love America. You know, how could you possibly protest a group that has such lofty aims? But what you can do and what you can encourage your elected officials and, importantly, your local journalists on the ground, what you can do is go to places like followthemoney.org or opensecrets.org and track the spending of these groups to see who's really behind them. Now, the dark money dodge involves all sorts of obfuscation there. So I think that when you see an ad, probably at the last minute, it's probably really negative in tone. It's probably run by an organization with some lofty, patriotic-sounding name. You can probably bet that there's some obfuscation behind it. Sometimes there's confusion between whether an ad is coming from a super PAC or from a dark money group. These days, they're pretty much being used interchangeably. So if you want to anonymize the source of this money, you run it through a 501c4 group, whereas if you don't care about that anonymity, you run it through a super PAC. But when you bounce money back and forth between the two, it launders that money. So the most important thing that people need to do is to make sure that we have disclosure laws on the books in our localities, and that we actually enforce them and we hold our elected officials accountable. If you're a candidate and you're running for office, running on a platform that says that you're not going to take any dark money, that you're not going to take any corporate PAC money, those have been very popular positions, and they've proven to be effective, too, just as a political strategy. So at the end of the day, it does become a First Amendment discussion. It becomes a First Amendment debate about, you know, where is this level of free speech? Folks on the other side of the dark money debate will say that they think that having to disclose who's putting money into these political campaigns is a violation of their free speech rights. I would disagree with that and tend to say that with more money comes more power and more speech. That's just how it works. One of the things we saw in Montana is, like, you know, pretty quickly in a cheap state, right, where the media markets are really affordable, pretty quickly you can buy up every ad in the whole state. I mean, this really is a zero-sum game. Some people do have more speech than others, and if you get there first with more money than others, you just get more speech. And I think that the folks who are pushing for campaign finance reform on a bunch of different angles, some are advocating for, you know, constitutional amendments to overturn Citizens United. Other folks are really kind of pushing at the local level to establish free and clear and transparent elections. But all of that really comes down to a fundamental kind of re-understanding of what the First Amendment does and how it can equalize that political speech.
Well, and that kind of touches upon the long debated question of are corporations people too, does it not?
Yeah, it does. And that's a whole other, you know, kind of the two arms of Citizens United are that, you know, money is speech and corporations are people. And we've just been talking about the money is speech part. And the other important component of that is coming to an understanding of, you know, corporate personhood, which has a very long history of jurisprudence in the U.S. and is going to take a lot of unwinding. But what folks can do, especially at the municipality level, like in Milwaukee, is to make sure that elections that are run at the city level, that's a really good starting place. We're talking city councils, we're talking school boards, we're talking your mayoral race, to make sure that you can ensure transparency with those races. And I think that campaign finance reform is going to move a lot like issues like marriage equality, where it wasn't a top-down approach, it was a bottom-up approach, where we saw one municipality after another municipality coming up with resolutions and declarations that they were going to, you know, make themselves, you know, declare that they're in support of this issue and just let the brush fire catch fire that way and move from the bottom up instead of from the top down.
Right. You've been mentioning Citizens United, which was a U.S. Supreme Court decision made in 2010. And I'm also wondering, there's another Wisconsin connection to campaign finance reform that is debated whether it was very effective or not, was the McCain-Feingold campaign reform law. Do you think that the change really is needing to be bottom up despite having federal offices dedicated to changing campaign finance reform?
You know, I think we need both. But I think that the urgency that is required because of, I mean, look at the news that just broke a couple of days ago. It all goes back to campaign finance. It all goes back to following the money that's moving into political campaigns. And the news that broke with Michael Cohen and President Trump isn't even starting to touch on the fact that we well may have had foreign money pouring into our presidential campaigns as well. So, yes, we absolutely need enforcement at the federal level. I think that reformers need to keep pushing for that. But I also want to give folks a sense of hope that you can actually have really significant effects at the state and local level, too, because the reality is that with the Supreme Court in place that we have right now, which is essentially the same Supreme Court that voted for Citizens United, that's probably not going to go anywhere anytime quick. So the best way to show that pressure to our elected officials in Washington, D.C., and frankly to the Supreme Court, is to show that the average everyday voter is just demanding that we get our elections back in order, that we know where the money is coming from that's trying to influence this massive amount of political power that we have in American elections.
During a testimony during Dark Money in Montana, one of the lawyers stated, you know, quote, "Do we care enough and are we brave enough?" How do you think this issue of dark money and campaign finance reform can be addressed effectively when, you know, it takes perhaps a national story such as President Trump's former lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen to plead guilty to things like tax evasion, falsifying submissions to a bank, and campaign finance violations? You know, do you think that there needs to be top stories to kind of get the public's attention and keep it on campaign finance reform?
I think those federal stories help to draw attention to how important these campaign finance issues are. There's also a big story that's developing right now about Russian money moving into the NRA's 501c4 group and the extent to which that was influencing elections as well. That's something that I'm keeping my eye on. And, of course, that's what we detail in our film, is how this whole strategy, how this shell game was working in Montana. We were able to really connect all of the dots and show people, how this scheme works and what to keep an eye out for. Also, kind of parenthetically, I should also note that there's a chapter about Wisconsin that we have in our film, and I'm afraid it serves as essentially a cautionary tale of what happens when you have dark money that takes root in one wing of government and how that can be really pernicious when it takes over each branch of government and none of the branches are keeping an eye out on the other branches where there's no enforcement whatsoever. That very quickly can allow an entire state's government to slip into the hands of just a moneyed few who are using dark money as their tactic. That's a really cautionary tale. So, you know, as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, that's really the role of this film is to show how this scheme works so that we can call people's attention to it and show them how these dots are really connected. Because I think that the average voter is pretty skeptical and fairly suspicious and understands that there's a lot of money in politics, there's a lot of money in anonymous money in politics, and that leads to pretty rampant corruption. And people are, I think, pretty fed up. I mean, if you look at all of the major candidates that were running for office at the presidential level in 2016, they were all, you know, saying pretty much the same thing, that, you know, the system is broken, there's way too much money, it leads to corruption, we need to call it whatever you want, drain the swamp, right? Everybody was kind of pushing that same button, because there's one thing that is clear is that across the political aisle, across the political spectrum, that people are really fed up with the way that we're running our elections and with the influence of money in politics. This is really a bipartisan issue. So what does that mean in, you know, spots like Milwaukee, where we, you know, our elected officials are pretty much, I think there's a tendency to skew to the left side of the aisle, is like we just have to make sure that we hold those elected officials accountable once they get into office so that we can actually do something about campaign finance reform instead of just talking about it.
Well, Kimberly Reed, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today about your documentary, Dark Money.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kimberly Reed is director and producer of the new documentary, Dark Money. She spoke with Audrey Nowakowski. The film opens in Milwaukee at the Oriental Theater today, and you can find out more at WUWN.com.